You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Greetings. This is Quantum Leap Book Club, and I am Parisha, your host this week, and my co-hosts are actually Geraldine Dahl-Vival, Trina L. Cooper, and we have Rosemarie Heyer and Joyce Mullenhauer. Okay, and they are our weekly co-hosts, and I often have to actually go carry the whole weight of the program. So we're very fortunate that we have four beautiful women sharing great feminine intelligence, right? So we're on a good place. Now we're going to finish answering questions this week of on chapter eight. Some of the, I think out of all of the book, that was the chapter that got the most feedback, as well as actually putting us to the task of making sure you understand some of the pretty heavy stuff. Dr. Wolf in the Mind into Matter book is one I suggest to beginners in the search for spirituality and seekers. And I still hold true to that, though each time I've suggested that and work with people who are beginning it, I always learn more myself from their questions and the confusion that may come from it. So I'm very delighted that we're actually focusing on this. Chapter 8 is a very meaningful part of where you can go and actually create the life and the beauty that you want. So we definitely don't want to jump any further in until we answer your questions and come close as we can to making sure you understand stuff. So basically we covered last airing, we actually covered the beginning of the chapter, and we went through the mouse story and the whole situation with that with some explanation, and actually come all the way over to we were looking at starting with page 122. And there were at least several people that were saying, okay, I think I got all of that. But then when we went to 122 and we started reading this, I don't know that I'm real clear what the point was. And that one starts with, now I want you to imagine that surrounding you is a giant bubble. And I would ask you, that's exactly where I want you to go, that you see the auric field as you being encapsulated in a beautiful big bubble of energy, like a cell within the actual space and time that exists, okay? And so I'm going to invite that my co-host, any of you that would like to actually bring some thought and some feeling about what you got out of that particular part. So we go on 122, start at the paragraph, first paragraph on 122. We go over and cover the actual two paragraphs on page 123. All right. Anyone want to actually take on and give some insight here?
This is Geraldine in Sydney, Australia. And the key part that I like, and it's actually from the very first part of that paragraph where it says, the bubble forms your field of alchemical possibilities.
Yeah.
And knowing that, it really links to other information as well, where it says, we are an electromagnetic field, that and magnetic field is what draws things to us or draws us to situations, and that our electro, for example, may be our thoughts and the magnetic would be our feelings, and they've got to be together. And I've realized in my own life, I did a meditation. I was looking at behaviors to let go of them, and one of them was feeling angry. Most people wouldn't describe me as an angry person, really not normally, and I checked and they said no, but I noticed that I had I was looking into the environment and I'd see something that made me angry and I'd have a chemical response to that. So noticing that in the meditation, that was the thing to let go of that day. And I realized by starting to observe it, how many times it was actually there, just a very small dose, just here's a little drop. And I realized that's what I then put into my alchemical possibilities. And a situation came up with the bank. They closed one of my loan accounts, and I realized that I had created a situation to feed the anger because I'd done so well in not stimulating those cells and feeding them. But as soon as I recognized it, took a deep breath, changed some things, the bank rang back. I had another meeting with them and it was all fixed and they apologized and was put back in place. But I fully realized that I created that scenario to feed that anger, and it was related to this, that I put the possibilities into my auric field. And seeing that doesn't mean you be hard on yourself, but it means you can actually realize that as I move through life, I am creating the most likelihood. And all this chapter talks about possibility and probability. Anything might be possible. How do we move it to probable? How do we move it to actual? And that's what it's giving us here, that we're creating that outside of our physical body. It will meet us before we physically touch it. So that's what I'd like to share on that
part. That's really good. Thank you very much for that. And what you bring forth on that as we read this part of the book is actually where you read, but then it goes on to say, it represents how far your body, your presence, is detectable, okay? And it represents how far from your body your presence is detectable, okay? Both in space and as your image exists and persists in people's memories in time. The bubble also extends into parallel worlds. And since our listeners had such a time of trying to get a grasp on what he's talking about as far as parallel worlds, okay, then it goes on in this particular paragraph here, okay, that how you are detected, okay? So here's, I think this is one of the most clear way to actually understand your, you know, we talk about the parallel worlds. Okay, you may be detected, therefore, in many different ways. Well, all those different ways are parallel existences that we take so for granted and is so normal to us, we're not aware of its individual effects. Perhaps they can even smell your coming. Okay, you have worked up recently and haven't bathed, or you are wearing perfume, or perhaps someone is thinking about you, remembering you as a child. Your field extends far back in time to when that person encountered your younger self. So what it keeps bringing up as far as the parallel worlds, right, is that We're in them all the time. And, you know, when we try to say we want to direct ourselves to a particular parallel, you have to come to where you've had a lot of work on what the neural net can do. Okay. And as long as your sensory perception is geared totally to your body, okay, and that you know of yourself only as a body, you're not going to be able to detect the individual atmosphere and distance of a parallel world. You're only perception of it is that you can understand that when any of these circumstances change or any of this is in action and someone's connected to your field and has detected you in memory of certain, you know, details, that what they're doing is moving through parallels with you. And they may see you as this kind of person right now. And in the next breath, they may see you in that environment as a different personality right now. So all of the particular makeup of the individual details of us represents a parallel world. Okay. Would any of you like to expand on that or anything you got from that?
I would like to. What really intrigued me when I was thinking through the timelessness of this is circumstances like people doing it's well known at the time of death, many people go through very coherent life review in a very short period of time. They actually look at all the many aspects of their life. When I contemplated the value of that for that person that was leaving their body, I began to realize with this understanding that Dr. Wolf is giving us, if we do that from time to time, at whatever stage we're at in our life, and particularly at moments when we're making a big decision, and just recognize this is the massive opportunity that we have to be in more than one parallel world and think it through and then put our intention and follow what we would like it to end up being.
Very good. Anybody else?
Yes, I'd like to comment on that as well. The a piece in here in the next paragraph where he says that it's important that you were sensed well before you actually walked in front of the bar. Your field goes with you wherever you go, and it changes. And it kind of tails into what Joyce was talking about, in the fact that we can raise and expand our energy, or the way that we project ourselves, people will pick up in different ways. And I know when I was young, I was really shy, and I could walk into a room and make myself so small that nobody would even notice that I was in the room. Or you might have somebody that walks in and goes and is like, you feel them coming before they ever hit the door. Or another example that someone that people would think of is when you walk into a room, you can literally sense the feeling of the room before anyone speaks, before you see anyone. And I know for me, I tried an experiment at 15. This wasn't even, at that point in time, I didn't know about any of these energy things. All I knew was I didn't like being small and I didn't like being unnoticed. So I decided, imagined what it would be like to make a shift, make a change. I was going into an environment with my cousin and I said, oh, nobody's ever going to know me. They'll never see me again. So I'm going to be a completely different person. I'm going to be like bubbly and big and do all this stuff. Well, I went with her to this party and I pretended and imagined myself as a completely different person. And if you think about it, that's what actors do when they really get into their roles.
That's right.
And I had the best time. I had so much fun. But then I had to come back home into my old environment, and I had already shifted the way that I was thinking. I had shifted into a different way of being, or into a different parallel, not the same way. And all of a sudden, here's all these people that know me one way, and I'm wanting to be something different. So as we change ourselves, as we project differently, or we get into characters, or we play our roles, or put our hats on, we get perceived in so many different ways from people, and our aura shifts and changes as we go through life like that. Mm-hmm. So you can literally imagine yourself being a different way and step into that place and be in that role. And people will pick up on that. So that's just what I wanted to add to the conversation.
That's real good. And that brings even more detail in there, Trina, when you look at the fact that when he starts actually giving Joe as the example, and that Joe was in the bar and being very loud, that it, because when we think of the bubble, especially those of us who work with our centers and everything, our bubble is about 10 feet around us, right? He actually brings the point up here, which is really good, that in the instance of the story of Joe, that if you're coming in and you're on the outside of the bar, and that you can hear Joe, okay, just think of a bar full of people and everything, and there's one voice above all of that you can hear. Okay, Joe's aura, or his bubble, has extended itself beyond the walls of where he's at. So, you know, what excites me about that is I want our listeners to know then, if you broadcast, if, you know, it's so much, and I'm working with a lot of people who are very close to me. Okay, we talk at such a level that we never ever give our power and our energy out, that you have to project, and actors have to learn a certain amount of projection in order to actually deliver their scripts. And that means you have to talk in a very bold way. Okay, any of you who know Dr. Bruce Lipton, Bruce Lipton gets up there and he fires the whole building. I've been in buildings coming down an elevator three levels to get to the program he's talking, and I can hear him in the elevator, okay? And it's like, so he takes on the whole building, and everybody says he talks so loud. No, he's broadcasting loud and clear. And I'm sure somewhere that whole city is having impact from him, okay? And that when you're talking, you need to have that enthusiastic boldness that becomes volume. And to realize, just think about this, okay, so you're talking loud enough that you can actually overcome the noise hum in the environment that you're in. So it wouldn't matter if that's positive, negative, loud music, you know, sex music, you know, criminal music, whatever. And you can actually bring your octave and your broadcast above that. You're totally resolving any negative effects. And if your mind is actually being totally aware of what you're saying and making sure that it has purpose and direction on whatever you would like to have that would be better, okay, just think of that. His energy is outside that bar, out on the street, and he's affecting and bringing, as they enter, as these people would enter the bar where Joe's at, they're traveling all of the parallel worlds that he's affecting, that he's having effect of all the way through there. So, I mean, I don't know what the details are of his conversation. I just want you to know, being you exchange yourself in that position, and you know that you're broadcasting, and I've done this in places where other people had those big speaker phones, and I mean, as far as what I would consider hearing range and stuff, they were louder than my voice could project. But I realized that when the people come forward to talk, they were the ones that was way back in the auditorium, okay? So it's you and you in the bubble, and how far you can make that bubble expand out, because we can take it. You can hold the world and the universe in your bubble. Why? Because you're in all those parallels. So you can use this to understand then, whenever you want to make sure that love is what's happening, or happiness is what's happening, or trust is what's happening, that you're being very bold in allowing the volume of you to move your aura out. You cannot do it by talking very low and saying, well, you're not going to do it. Okay. But when you can pronounce and send it out there, okay, it touches everything. And if you're holding in your heart that you want peace, that you want unity, that you want happiness, that you want respect, put it out there and see that that happens. When I was working with people, and there were some protests going on as a very young person, I would get in on protests for different things, maybe abusive husbands to women and stuff like that. And that has effect, because you make the broadcasting loud enough that people way beyond where you're standing hears it, and it penetrates the environment, which means it's going through the parallels. And then you've got all of that coming back, because it's sort of like the boomerang. Whatever you send out comes back. And you've made such progress. So use this, understand this, okay? Speak out what you want. Trina, you just shared that as a young person, you kind of made yourself invisible, but then you didn't care, and then you put yourself out there. Well, that's what awakens people. You're not going to awaken people by being polite and soft-spoken. You have to show the determination and confidence in what you're saying and broadcast it. So if you want peace, if you want happiness, be preoccupied with it. Get that bubble way out there. Touch everything. And everything responds to it. So this is really very, very good that Wolf brings this up very clearly in this particular chapter. This actually on page 122. Anybody else have something you'd like to add on that?
Yes, I'd like to add just that I have experienced that with singing, you know, that the idea about singing is all about projection, not only about singing the right notes. And I have experienced that I was singing in front of an audience, about 100 people, and the change of the energy I was able to create in the room was much bigger when I was singing than when I was talking. What happened here? I think what happened was that my mind calmed down. When you sing, your mind calms down. And then all you are is into your energy, and you expand that energy. And then that's the magic of singing, that projection, that there's no memories. It's just space you're creating. You're just going into the space. And the other time I'm experiencing that is in nature. As you said, that I can go to a lot of parallel places. Because in nature, it seems to be more easier to expand that aura and to be in the wide range of what is present in front of me, seen or unseen.
Okay, very good. Anybody else got some more you want to add to that, or are we kind of complete with that?
Geraldine, just one quick comment here, and that is there, it specifically says that we take this bubble with us. And I feel that's an important thing to remember in many situations. If you're finding, like if I find I'm coming up with the same outcome, then it's my bubble. Doesn't matter who else is out there. You know, as we've talked about, if it's out there, I put it into my script as the director and script writer, I put it there. So I can't complain that the actors are following my script. So that thing of we take our bubble, we can say, well, if I change this job, I change this relationship, I change this, change that. You didn't change your bubble. So I feel that's a key tool that we can use in this as well. And Trina gave an example of that, changing her bubble, and the people at the party responded to her as what she put into the bubble.
Well, like when we, but yeah, and that, to know that, to like when all of you have experience with Sundance, that when we had our friend from Australia come in and bring his brilliant photography and everything, what's going on in that arbor, that one little cell out in the middle of a huge forest and land, okay, how far reaching it was because of the drum beat. And you got to see actually how spirit was moving in the smoke and stuff. And see, those are the dimensions that we're trying to explain are with us all the time. It's just that in the visionary process of your neurons, you have not opened. Remember that your eye is another brain and it has its own neuron that in the way to move. Know that your heart is a brain. It has more neurons than your body, your brain, okay? So when you know that and all these things are working, they are the perceptions and the receivers that are picking up what you're actually working with. So when you have a group consciousness moving together in harmony, because listen, we're all individual. Remember the fingerprint says never has there been and never will there be another you. Okay, and so when you think of the individual impact you have this one time in space time, then you want to put all you've got into it and never ever doubt how you are affecting other people by just something you say. Even something you're wearing could bring people through a whole different dimension. You understand that? Your hairstyle, everything that you actually put on should be a part of your message. You have to dress your message. You have to use the words that takes people to where you want them to go with what you're saying. And that takes, you have to pay attention to your scripts. That's why actors and actresses can give us the feeling that we really believe this movie. We cry, we laugh, we carry on emotionally. And that's because they are purposely taking us there with the way they're saying and the words they're using and even the tonation that they put on. So when we're looking at this, okay, this is telling us how, you know, stop trying to say, I want these individual. I want to know when I'm in this other universe. Well, you want to do something? Go in the bathroom. Put a mirror on the door and a mirror wherever your medicine cabinet is. Look in one mirror and talk, okay, and then turn around and look at the other mirror. You just went through 14 dimensions. Now, what did you get from it? See, that's what you're seeking. Well, when you start paying attention with what you're broadcasting, you'll see how far reaching it is. We had occasions to actually, some of our organization went with me. We were actually in Europe during the time of the communist shift and changed in what was called Czechoslovakia in that particular part of the world. And at the given time we were there, people's word went out. And I mean, the city was jammed, packed with people in the streets wanting to hear what we had to say. And it isn't anything other than I had learned how to broadcast. And you had people that told people, because there wasn't anybody announcing it on some TV or program or something. And they all come because they were on the same parallel wave that I was on. And everybody in the world tried to stop this. I mean, you had the Communist Party trying to tell us that they had a bomb set and they were going to blow us all up and everything else. And in my heart of hearts, I knew, no, in this bubble, we're all in the same bubble and you can't come here. Okay. And it just worked perfectly. When you're standing at a bus stop, how far can you think and include in your awareness? Because you're having an effect on that, especially if you're thinking it. Heart math, actually the Institute of Heart Math has said that if we're standing within 10 feet of another person, I can even change their heartbeat. when a person's getting ready to have a heart attack, within 10 feet of them, you can change that heart attack. See, these aren't things they teach you in school. These are not things that you can actually know how effective you can be in happiness, in wealth, and in relationships. And to know that you're not doing it to overcome or suppress somebody is the principle. But that within even as close as 10 feet, you stand there and breathe and focus in that person's heartbeat. And listen, well, how do we know this? We've done experiments with it. We've seen it. Okay, we've seen it. In the particular science and technology that I'm working with, because I totally am peaceful and acceptable with the fact I see dead people. Okay, well, some friends of mine says, well, let's investigate that. Let's play with that. So we go into this big, you know, garage-like place, and they stick me in this little room that's all lined with some kind of metals and everything else. And then they let me sit there and see if any dead people come. Well, we sat there for a while. No dead people come. And so the guy on the microphone says, okay, we're not seeing anything. I said, I'm not calling anybody, and I'm not talking to anybody. Who do you want to talk to? And then he said, well, call in my mother. And he gave, you know, his mother's name. So I simply began to say, if you're there and within range, could you possibly come and communicate? And she showed up. He could see her on it was the most rewarding experience. He could see her in his computer. He could see first just the light and a kind of a fuzzy film, you know, foggy kind of thing. And then as he took over, giving me the questions to ask her. And as I would ask the questions, she started becoming more clear in detail because she was presenting herself as he remembered her. Remember, I had never seen her. I had no image of her. But as more than he asked the questions, and he never, it wasn't that he was making her prove it was really her, like what day did we go to the gym or whatever, you know, nothing like that. It was just general conversation of the love and the many years of gratefulness for the mother that actually encouraged him to become who he is and stuff like that. And her reception of that was that she become clearer and more clearer in the face to where I could actually identify her. And that receptiveness is come from him projecting and broadcasting. I told him, do not speak softly to her. Let volume project what you need. And so when he would talk to her, he was talking to her a little bit more loud than he needed to, but that it still worked. And then, like I said, the whole thing was the comment. He said, so tell me, Mom, is there life after death? And her question to him, is there really death? What are you talking about? So there, we have that. And like, and he was my biggest skeptic. Oh, he really always gave me quite a run when I would be talking about the dead people present, stuff like that. And actually in the manner of how he was approaching, he's calling me a quack. Okay. And then after this, I mean, he's in front of his technology. They got this room all wired and everything. And at this point, he can't actually say anything. And then not due to any stimulus I'm putting into the little cage we were in, okay, other people on the same vibrational parallel actually begin to come in the room. So all of a sudden he's detecting that there are several other people there, not just her. And he could see that. So he's become one of my strongest advocates now, right? So, but anyway, it's like that all comes from the bubble we're in. Whenever there's an individual change of something, there has to be another vibrational field or a veil that now there's something in. And though that veil may look as hair thin as a hair, it is massive. It's massive. So when you begin to look at your awareness, the awareness is how many, you know, every time you look at something, like I can look over here at the bookshelf, they're very dark wood. And I see that the books are disordered. That bothers me. Okay. Then I realize how many parallel worlds I just went through with that. And I realize I will personally make the decision to change that because I want it to be a really easy, healthy change through the parallels. And so you look around at your environment and there's a practice that we've learned and shared that the Scientologists actually use. And it's actually touching things and actually becoming aware that they're spinning at the same particular spin you are, so that you have location. So you actually ground yourself to a particular set of awarenesses that enhances the way you can actually direct and change things. So if you're a salesperson and you talk everything on the phone, well, then one of the things, not sit down and get it on, okay, that's one thing. But when you walk in, this is your workspace, walk around and touch everything and know that from that point, you resolve all the parallel worlds that come together and ground you where you can have the most effect. And it works. Okay, it's been tested. Our technology gives us so much encouragement and so much proof. And it's just something simple. And just because maybe awareness is not strong enough with you yet, and you don't believe it, let it happen. Just give yourself the opportunity to let it happen a while. And know that that's what Wolf is talking about here. This is exactly the points he's making. And that we have so much more in a day, in a breath, than we could ever write a book about. You would have to put 100 series of books into one experience in one breath. And your awareness of that becomes as keen as what you can be aware of and what I perceive and make of it. Broadcast what you want the world to be. That's creating your reality. And you will experience it from your storyline of it, not mine. We each will have our own perceptive ability to make it what we want it to be. Well, what's holding you up? Health, wealth, and happiness. Go for it. Okay, and I mean really go for it. Do it and let it happen and become. Okay, anybody else have something you want to share with those particular parts of the book? Okay, well, they were the two major places people still had some confusion and wanted to know, so what do I do with that? Okay, and some of you have actually finished up and probably gone through this chapter 2 or 3 times now. So are there particulars that we haven't discussed that you would like to make sure you make a point on?
Yes, I would like to make a point regarding on page 124, he speaks about pictures and how dictators are influencing the mass society by being present everywhere as a picture and so on. And I had quite some few insights when I listened to that, because as we all know, in Tibet, many of the people are not allowed to have the picture of the Dalai Lama up in their house. And also many people who are Christians have Mary and Jesus in their house as a picture. And also that is also an influence. That is also an auric field which creates a certain space. And I also find it interesting that that I can actually use that to create a different space and to create a different quality just by pictures and in a positive and in a negative way.
Very, very, very good. And then we come over to page 125. I think that's what this is. Okay, 125. And there are questions about this part of the chapter. I'm talking to my co-host now. And it was the timeless as the seed of time. What did you make of that? What clarity can you bring for people to understand exactly? What is he saying here?
This is Geraldine in Sydney, Australia, and a key part that I got from this is you have a beginning and you have an end, and you can either walk all loopy-doopy and spend a whole lot of time and you still get to the end, or you can go from A to B. So that the timelessness of time, and it's also from the book as well, there's time and space. What are we actually doing when we go from A to B, and we include a whole lot of space because we've deviated? By doing a whole lot of space, it's taken more time. So time itself isn't the one measure. It's not linear. And I appreciated recently listening to some of the speakers from Africa on the World United conferences that are about bringing global unity. And I noticed that where myself and others in the West would use the word time, you know, it's not enough time, we've got to make more time. The word I heard frequently used was space. Let's create more space for each other. let's create a space for this. And it was that just subtle, but interesting to see that where I may use the word time, the word space was being used. And it really helps me here, because now when I'm moving, I'm not like it'll take me 5 minutes to get there. I'm thinking I'm going to put my body from this location to that location. I'm going to deviate 50 times. And for so many of us, there is that recognition that distraction and diversions are one thing that can rob us of feeling good, whether you get the thing done or not. If you can get to the end of a moment and go, wow, I completed that and I stayed on task, it's a feeling. Whereas, you know, if you did it, but you went to the fridge 3 times, you checked a few messages, you thought it was really important to post on Facebook, and then you come back to it, you've done what he shows here. You've maybe gone down 9 steps and spent a whole lot of energy to do that one outcome that was your endpoint. So for me, this is about A to B. If you're going to do B, and it's the most important thing, stay focused and do it. But in that, I also say there are times when we open to the universe and allow ourselves to know that if something comes knocking on the door, we have the consciousness rather than the reactive to go to it. We have the conscious decision to say, okay, this has presented itself. Is this now for me to do? Is this a higher priority than the A to B I'd given myself? Because that does happen as well. So that can also be consciously allowing that into our day.
Very, very good. I'm going to ask Joyce to actually read. Joyce, can you start reading on the bottom of page 125 where it says in tablet one, and actually read on over to the next page?
In table one, I have listed some typical downward paths wherein the magician never attempts to reclimb any step. The table shows the different number of ways a descent could take place depending on the number of stairs and the number of leaps taken. For example, descending 6 stairs, the magician could either leap directly to the bottom or could he make his way down 1 step at a time. The most likely way, however, has him descend by taking 3 leaps. He could do this in 6 different ways. Thus, if we don't consider how he does it, but only count the number of leaps he takes, it becomes most probable that he will descend in 3 leaps.
Okay, go on.
As goes the magician, so goes the whole universe. For it appears that the universe is also following a downward path of a certain kind. It appears to be descending, only this time the descent is in time, and the downward spiral appears to be a gain of information and a loss of order. The universe appears to be gradually getting smarter, as it also appears to be losing order and becoming more chaotic. The question is, how? The answer is again in leaps. And it appears to be following all possible paths downward. The most likely sequence appears to be the only sequence followed. But in reality, all of them are taking place simultaneously in alternate universe possibilities.
Go ahead with the last one.
Yep. Yeah, there is something constant in all of these universes, the total energy released. Given that the beginning step and the final step are determined ahead of time, they may be the moment of the Big Bang and some appropriate ending moment of time, possibly the Big Crunch. Given that the energy released along each step is the same, then the final tally is always the same, regardless of the story and regardless of the likelihood of the story being true. The universe appears to conserve energy as it becomes more chaotic and more information rich.
Very, very good. Very well read. Yes. So talk about that. What does that help you become aware of? as far as the effects we have, because he points out here that the outcome is already determined before you even begin. You understand that, right? So all of the universes have the parallels have already lined up just from the fact that it's almost like, you know how you're watching TV or something, and there's a drag of time. You see them, their mouth moving, and then you know, you really don't hear them until later, okay, or something. So there's a time off. This actually represents, the best way I could see this is this kind of represents that, because we've already decided the outcome, like the decision here to take 6 steps and 3 leaps, okay? So somebody is what, taking 2 steps at a time, so it only takes them 3 downward movements to do that, okay? But that was thought and happened before they acted on it. So the point is as energy, you begin to be perceptively ahead of everything that happens. As body, you are always behind and living in the past. How often have you heard that? And this is the point he makes with that. Okay, the more we actually continue to focus and move our neurons toward understanding that we are energy and that everything's energy. I mean, we're not unique to that. Everything's energy. Everything is spinning at a particular frequency that makes you see it as physical and makes it visible within your range. Okay, but in essence, what we're doing is that we have already done whatever the physical world registers. So you're perceptively ahead of yourself. Okay, and in energy, the body is not talking so loud that you don't know that. As living as a body or being attuned to only the body, and the body is an altar, a magnificent and powerful body. Okay, but it's just a shell. And so when we're in body mind, we're in the past all the time because it's already been done. That whatever we're doing physically has already happened and is done. And when you actually hear what he's talking about here and how it moves with the universes, as long as you are a physical person, and that means you only think through body mind. So the only thing you know is if the body is okay, if you're tired, if you're hurt, and if the chair is uncomfortable. So the body's doing all the talk. You're always in the past. It's already been done. It's already happened. Statement already made. So how you begin to change that is you get out of the body. And for most people, that would be through acts of meditation. So in meditation, and if you're doing serious meditation, and that takes about 3 to 6 hours a day, okay, that's why people grow very rapidly into the sense of who they are in ashrams and stuff, because that's what happens all day, okay? And so once you get to that and you can actually have that neural path made, then you're aware that you're seeing things in slow motion and you realize it's already happened. And I run time. When I tell people I'm running time, I use that as a benefit to tell me exactly what's going to come be the outcome of what's going on. And I'm by no means special in that. There's a lot of people that actually run time. And you begin to do that because you're more light than you are matter. And right now we are in the fifth dimension, which is all light. And as our world evolves, we've already started a few months back to actually begin to adjust and mutate to live in the particular atmosphere. So now you have people acting crazy and all kinds of outrageous things happening. The good part of it is it's resolving the negative. So it's all in a good place, okay? Anybody else want to talk and exchange anything on that?
When I read the piece about the universe getting smarter, but it becoming more chaotic, the way I understand that or see that is that more of these parallel worlds are being tapped into, more of this potential. People are following more of these pathways. And when we look out and see what's coming forward, and it seems like time is moving quicker, or people are coming up with similar ideas on completely different continents, but they're tapping into a potential or a possibility. That there's more and more information that's coming in. People are touching into it, and more of these parallels are being followed. So it seems to be extremely chaotic, yet more of these worlds are being tapped into. And when you talk about slowing down and going into meditation, you can really move into those places yourself with the information, asking for it, looking for it, and asking a question. You know, what's the possibility? What could be a solution to this? You might ask it right before you go to sleep at night. And in the morning, you wake up and you have an aha moment or something pops in your head. And I always see those as tapping into these other fields of possibilities that my mind isn't thinking about. But when I open myself up and I just ask the question, all of a sudden the information drops in.
Really good.
What I had.
Geraldine, can you start reading at the bottom of page 126 with imagine being in a typical three-leap story?
Imagine being in a typical three-leap story in a six-stair descent. For example, you can leap steps. I'll start that again. For example, you leap from steps 1 to 3 to 4 to 6. In doing this, you give up 2, then 1, then 2 energy units, 5 in all, as you make your way down. Or the other possible stories are also present, and the total energy released is the same in each story, but the energy released in those other stories will have a different distribution.
Yes.
For example, For example, in a two-leap story, say 1 to 2 to 6, the energy will be 1 unit, then 4 units of energy, again, 5 in all. Although you're not aware of the other story possibilities, nevertheless, their energy releases will be sensed in your universe as an auric field of possibilities, a light glow or sense of light presence. You won't see this energy or feel it consciously because its total always amounts to the same total you're experiencing. You are aware of unusual or normal total light energy. You are not aware of unusual or abnormal total of light energy. The key here is that this abnormal energy will nevertheless exist as light, a glow, an aura in your mind, but will not be contained in the flipbook of the material universe. The aura has physical consequences, yet it is not physical.
Yeah. So basically, what we're doing when, like, especially when I ask you, the beginners that ask me what to do and have come into the listening audience, Mind into Matter for me actually takes you to what I would consider some practical understanding of the unpracticality of what you're actually seeing. My first need to help people understand exactly what's real came from, as a child, actually learning and reading the Bible to my grandmother. And the stories in the Bible, okay, to living just a physical world, how could you take any of it serious? Yet if you know what the parallel worlds are, and like the point here that he's making, is that if you're jumping them 2 steps at a time and landing on the 3rd step, okay, that does not mean that the space, time, and parallel from step 1 to step 3, where your feet lands, didn't exist. It's just that at this time you give it no coherence. And the coherent part of us deals with what is actually our target or our intention or our particular need. Okay. And so again, I think that this comes back and states very much, you know, if for enlightenment purposes, to become all that you can be and what you can actually live and understand in this, it's all there for you. You have to do the work to get to it. Life is nothing more than exchanging experience and time. So you have to ask yourself, where are you spending your time? Because it's the only thing you can spend, because once it's gone, it's gone. So what are you looking at in your daily life and putting to the actual goal that you have of actually coming to being aware more, being involved in it, and actually being coherent? Coherent is knowing that what you are physically witnessing has already happened. That whatever I'm saying to you has already happened, and that we're about 4 seconds delay on it. And there are purposes and practices of how to not let that happen, where you can move time, space to make sure that you're in the moment. There's total balance and harmony between the body and the spirit. So there is so much to whatever your various reasons are to seek more and to understand more. It is so worth the journey and the time. You can come to the end of your time and the end of your days, whether whatever age you are. But the final day is the final day. And in that, what happens with every human being is looking at what they have done and where they wanted to be. So where you want to understand that the journey didn't stop because the body is no longer moving is exactly what you're discovering. So you're looking for afterlife because the afterlife is happening right now. And the more you come to understand just segments of this, the pieces, and I hope that we have actually delivered that, because we want to start with chapter 9 next week, is that when you're actually looking at that, be kind to yourself. Frustration isn't necessary when you know that you're learning. You know, the repetitions that one has to do before something actually creates the neural path. Okay, these are powerful things. So being patient and kind to yourself and measuring. The fact is, if you actually tried, you already succeeded. So to actually know that when you come to your meditation and you prepare a place, a sacred space where you do meditation, or maybe you have determined that the posture you take is how you declare your space, however that is, that's effective. So if you decide to take your meditation position in the middle of a train yard and there's trains going in all directions and the roar and everything's there, you can minimize that. And the parallel world that you end up in is where you go once you close the eyes and the blackness of the void and the emptiness of the void becomes where you're at. Then jump on any streetcar in time you want to and have a powerful, magnificent ride, because that's life. And when we exchange the time to learn and become that, then we understand how we trapped ourselves into so many stories that always got priority over the reality that's what we're here for, is to develop that and to actually know that humanity and the body, mind, child actually has learned to be in extreme intelligence. Okay, so it's all about that. It's all about us, and it's all about how we use that time. So take more time and understand this. I am delighted that you asked your questions. I had one people actually apologizing and saying that she felt what her problem was putting out negativity. And it's like, oh, no. You know, let us go in the venture with you. Let us be the adventure with you. I love to surf the Zenobia. So when you ask your questions, I'm going to go look at this element from a different place. I'm going to find your parallel, and I'm going to get in your parallel, and I'm going to be there and see it as you need to see it. That's what we do. That's who we are. So please bring your questions. And again, I remind you, we have a Facebook that you can come on. I get a lot of input from the other sources that are helping broadcast our program. But we have a Facebook. Come closer. Talk to the co-hosts. They all love what they do. They're all here for you. Just open the window and let yourself in. Do what Trina shared with you. Find that moment when you don't have to worry about who's going to think what, because you won't necessarily see them ever again. But in that moment, who you will see for the rest of your life is the freedom that you took on. The letting yourself be what you can be. That'll stay with you forever. So in that, please take care with the book. And next week, please look at chapter 9, because we will be moving on to that. And actually, if you know people who are having a birthday or friends that you're talking to, and maybe, you know, in the same conversation, learning that they're trying to seek and discover and understand, please do us a favor and actually mention Dr. Wolf's book and have them join us on the show, okay? We won't be in this book until after we get through with the last chapter. But at this point, any questions you would bring, we could still be willing to answer. So know that you are what's important and make it worth our time to exchange this time with you. Co-hosts, do any of you have anything you'd like to say in closing? Anybody?
This is Geraldine, and it's a reflection just back on the title of Chapter 8, Meaning and Manifestation, The Great Gathering. And here it's brilliant that Dr. Wolf, what he always does too, is start with a quote from somebody else. And I'll just read half that quote. "There is neither spirit nor matter in the world. The stuff of the universe is spirit matter. No other substance than this could produce the human molecule." So it's a beautiful, again, the reflection of how well Dr. Wolf puts things together. It's his nature. There's quirky, there's fun, there's acknowledging at all times that we're spirit and matter. And I feel he's told us this is the gathering. So gathering means you bring it all together before you make it. So he's giving us the tools for what we need to gather, almost like you make a compost before you plant a garden.
Right. And we are spirit experiencing the matter. Okay. Anybody else have something else?
Yes. I would like to just say for any of us that have had frustrating moments, and I have had some of those when I've been present with people making pretty chaotic statements that they really haven't got any base for. Instead of wishing I had some words to convince them to do something different, what we talked about today is exactly what I need to do, is to hold my focus. I can be silent, but I can make a difference with what they are going off with without really thinking about what they're saying. So I appreciate that we have had this discussion today.
Wonderful. And anybody else? Rosemary, anything?
Yeah, I'm inspired by the last sentences of the chapter 8, where he speaks about that it is in the imaginal realm and that we can see it only when we look within. So it's retaining to what you have been saying, that we can find it in within, and we secretly all know it is within, and that is real, and that is the light we are, and and that light is actually consciousness.
Good, very good. Trina?
Yeah, mine goes a little bit in line with Geraldine's, and it's on the top of page 125, and it says, "The key is that all of this is just data, bits or organized patterns, but when grouped and arranged, flipped, so to speak, they turn into the moving experience of our daily lives." And that, to me, that one sentence explained the title of the book to me, that it's what we gather together, these bits, what we notice, we gather them together, we give them meaning, and we manifest the experiences of our lives through those.
All right. Very, very good. It's been a very good program. We've enjoyed every minute of it. And again, please go out and get the book. I can tell you that the co-hosts and I I've actually bought 5 different books. I use them for quite a while and then I give them away. But you could tell that we actually go through this book because some of them are very tattered and used, okay? So they have a history of themselves. And to understand that we are energy, okay, to continue to look at what Wolf is sharing here, and understanding that it all matters to the fact that we are not physical bodies. We are energy. And again, that spirit is experiencing itself with matter. And that let that be the exploration of your beautiful day. And know that we think of you in our meditations and send out prayers for you in every day of our lives. Meanwhile, you have a great week, and we'll be talking to you next week, chapter 9, okay? And meanwhile, have lots of health, wealth, and happiness. OCO.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.